Okay,
Lovely.
to start again. Good morning. And this is the March 27, 2024 meeting of the Island County Council of Governments. We're one person short of quorum at this moment, so we're going to wait to approve minutes until after we see if somebody else comes. And if we had had the documentation showing that John Mashashek has been appointed by the Port of Coopville, we would have quorum, but we don't have apparently the documentation. Is that right, John?
Right.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
So, I mean, if
we get it while you're here, John, then hey, sounds good. And we need to thank Kurt. Jill is not going to be here for IRTPO. Do you want to run that? We have a public hearing at IRTPO in an hour. Do you want to run that from your place?
Yeah, I can try. I may have to take a few minutes at the end of this meeting and move to a different location. I'm down in Florida, but I can work that out. So I'm back online at 1 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Terrific. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us today I hope you're there for fun times.
Oh, we are. We've had a blast. It's fly home day to day anyway. So it's time to go back to work.
Start thinking about this world over here.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, we're going to start by continuing our RCED program proposal. I'm going to turn this over to Michael Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the one thing that I would say before we get going is I'm a little hesitant for us to do this with such limited quorum here because we're kind of hoping to get some sort of consensus on these potential policy revisions. So I would look to you to see if do you want to do this today or because I'm fine with briefing people if that's what we would need to do, if they'd like to do that afterwards. Without Oak Harbor, without
Oak Harbor is an important player in this.
So
okay, Janet wants to speak. Yes, Janet.
Just do you mind, because I cannot find it because I literally just sat down in my office. Could somebody review the agenda for me? I apologize for not being as well prepared as I should be.
It's okay, Janet. You usually are way ahead of all of us. So if you want a day that you're not quite there yet, you will get there. I know. So we have two items on our agenda today. First is a continuation of the Rural County Economic Development Program proposal that we started last month. And then second, we're going to kind of talk about the value statements part for our comprehensive plan to kind of get a sense of the value statements from the members of the Council of Governments. So
I would agree with Michael's, if we can give a little time for people to maybe join us who are delayed, like I was in a phone call, that requires consensus. The values is a round robin conversation, I believe, where we're going to talk about our values and maybe hear what other people think or want to offer into that values discussion. Would you agree with me, Madam Chair?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. So that being the case, I'm going to turn this over to Emily Neff. Are you ready to kind of lead us through the values discussion?
Sure thing. I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. And Emily is our planner who's overseeing, who's kind of leading the comprehensive plan update process for us.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'm Emily Neff, Long Range Planner, leading the comprehensive plan update. Let me share my screen real quick. All right. So for some background here, we did four public meetings in February, and we have been doing some online surveys to get the public's input on our introduction chapter to the comprehensive plan and our vision and value statements. The board has been pretty clear that we're going to do a big kind of overhaul of what's existing in our comprehensive plan for the vision and values. And so we want to make sure that our new vision value statements represent the community's values today. So we have been leading some of these brainstorming workshops. We did one with the board a few weeks back, and Commissioner Bacon asked me to bring this here so we can make sure we are incorporating your value statements as well. So I'll just go through a couple slides here of some of the feedback we've gotten so far and then prompt you to share your input today. So what we asked of the public in our open houses and online, we asked them to think about what they value most about living in Island County and write a, value statement. So I value blank because blank. So pretty simple activity, but really trying to get at the heart of why people choose to live here and what people love about living here. And then we asked people to kind of rank their priorities in our open houses and online, and some key themes came out. So I wanted to go over those because they really do inform the value statements that came out of our activities. So we saw very heavily online that people valued protection of natural resources, rural character, local farms, and affordable housing. Those were the four significant themes that we heard from folks online or at our open houses and our in-person outreach. And then online, we had some similar themes that came out. Protection of natural resources, rural character, and access to open space were very highly rated. Falling close behind was local farms. And then we had some kind of close ties for the rest of the rating here. But really similar key themes between our online participants and our in-person participants. So I think that really kind of drives where our vision and values should go. So these are some example statements that we collected from the public during our engagement, and I'll just read through them quickly here. I value bike lanes and paths because it allows residents and visitors to access the island's many assets. I value proximity to nature because it adds immense value to my day-to-day well-being and that of my young family. I value the cultural landscape and especially the historic structures. I value our agricultural community. They contribute more to the community and economy than they get credit for. I value access to the shoreline because I appreciate the richness of the marine environment surrounding our islands. So we'd like you to think about those statements and contribute your own value statements here today, if you're so willing, so that we can make sure they're included in our rewrite of the introduction chapter of the comprehensive plan. And I'll turn it back over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Emily. I really appreciate it. And it's not my intention to put anyone on the spot. And if you haven't written anything down so far before you came here, that's perfectly understandable. If you have, then you're kind of ahead of the game. I just want to kind of look to the three of you, well, the four, because Janet's here. And Janet wasn't in the room when we were doing the value statements before. So maybe I'll start with Janet, because she's probably been more prepared and been thinking about this maybe more than others. And then I'm going to go to Kurt and to Molly and to John. Do you have a? You look like you have a question, John. What's your question?
Oh, just puzzlement about some of the, the examples that were presented, that seem to be in conflict with reality, affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, we bring up the issue of housing not being affordable, and yet the perception is that there are affordable housing here, which is kind of puzzling.
Oh, I think that what that was saying was that was a priority for them that we build more affordable housing. That was the thing that they are more. Are you there, Emily? That was my always been my assessment of the answer to that question was that a lot of people consider affordable housing to be one of the priorities of Island County that we need to need to come to solutions with.
To focus on it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Janet, do you want to kind of speak to your values, why you love Island County, what you think is important in Island County?
Thank you. These are the value statements I sent to Emily. So Emily, I will not make you insane by coming up with a whole new list. I listened to the board meeting where the board went over the values carefully after I got back from vacation. And then Emily and I talked in early February. And my statements were, I value community and a place where everyone has a sense of belonging. And that comes out of the concept that, I think what I love about Island County is this small town culture that we have, where even though I don't live in a town, that we have a sense of belonging in a place, and we have opportunities where people can get engaged in community events, in the schools, in this, because we know that, and this goes to the, Emily, and if I get the word wrong, but in our comp plan, we have to talk about human well-being at some point in that plan. What's that element or what's that concept in the comp plan language, Emily?
Yeah,
I'm not sure which element you're talking about specifically.
There's a, I don't even know that it's in any one element, but there's a place in this comp plan where we talk about the importance of human well-being in our comprehensive planning. And I just want to make sure I'm not in my social work language and I'm in language that is related to the comp plan, just
Some of the
to.
policies in housing we just reviewed emphasize human well-being. I will say there's probably other elements as well. They're just not coming to mind right now.
Yeah, so for me, I thought I was thinking through why do we do comprehensive planning? We do comprehensive planning because we want people to be in a place where they can have all of their resource needs met, they can thrive. And so for me, and it really does come out of 30 years as someone who did health and human services and community-based planning. So the very first value for me was really about planning for the people of Island County, planning for a place where they belong and they have a sense of community. I value protection of our natural resources for the generations to come. I say that because I think that relates to the first one, which is that if we're not protecting our aquifer recharge and our water resources and not protecting ourselves against flooding and all of the things that impact the people that live here, we're not doing our jobs. These are my opinions. So I said I value the protection of natural resources for the generations to come. And in some ways, that's that eighth generation paradigm that we see from our Native American neighbors. I value access to robust and affordable health care and the ability to age in place. Again, access to services. I have a very people-focused value statements. I value the access to the outdoors. This was in one of the statements that Emily referenced from one of our participants that said, I liked being able to get outside. It's good for my self and my young family and all the beauty and diversity of our islands. And then with healthy activity options for all ages, that's going to come out when we have a discussion about our passive versus active parks. I value consistent and reliable infrastructure, including multimodal transportation, water and septic solutions, and access to technology and broadband. That last one probably doesn't surprise many of you. I value public safety and trust in the systems that protect us and the first responders that serve us. I value a diverse and resilient economy that supports small and large businesses, government and healthcare employers, large agri local not large local agriculture that supports all sizes of farms, so not just big farms, but if someone wants to have an acre farm and support their own family, but that the importance of local food supply and an economy that recognizes a vibrant arts community. So that was my economic development element. I believe in plan density that has accompanying. We'll get to this in IRTPO. I talk about this a lot in our board meetings. I believe in planned density that has accompanying infrastructure and healthy spaces for all. The density includes UGAs, RADs, and PRDs. So I'm not saying that all of our, this is where in our conversation yesterday, I disagreed with the state who wants to push all of our density into our UGAs. And I'm saying we have alternative ways to create density and affordable housing across our whole county.
Thank you very much, Janet. I want to welcome Mayor Kennedy Horstman and Sabrina Combs from the City of Oak Harbor. We now have quorum. I appreciate that. And I kind of want to, what do you guys think? Do you want to continue with values or do you want to go to the Rural County Economic Development conversation that we've been waiting for other people for?
Maybe finish up values since
Okay.
we started.
You okay with that?
Yeah,
Sure,
because it
good.
should be pretty quick.
Yeah, should be. Okay, thank you very.
I'm here three times to get this done, so I would like to get this stuff done with him today.
Yeah, I would too. So thank you. So, Kurt, what are your values?
Well, I think it's interesting that the highest ranking different groups all are sort of interlinked. I really believe that rural character is affected by availability of housing, especially workforce housing. And then we have new data that shows healthcare workers. And by the way, Emily's second or third page showed that need, or at least the interest of the folks being as high as a housing need, it looked like that too has been dramatically affected by the lack of workforce housing. We have We just had BST and associates do an economic study of South Whidbey, and I'm not talking about all of Island County here, but on South Whidbey, we lost a lot of local healthcare workers after COVID, and they haven't come back. So what we're getting to fill the need is more and more commuters. And my theory, as you probably all know, is that that has an effect on rural character. So they're all kind of interrelated, and I don't know what Emily would do with that, if she needs to do anything with that. When I look at the data, I think the folks out there that answered the survey did a great job of talking about all the things we've been talking about. It starts with the environment, and that's great. But of course, as a port commissioner, I'm looking at economic vitality. And if you're going to continue with economic vitality, the more you promote that to the middle class, I believe that's what is going to retain our rural character as well. And then, of course, it helps satisfy some of the medical worker need. So that's pretty much, that's my piece.
Thank you very much, Kurt. You brought in some thoughts that we hadn't talked before, so which is why I wanted to bring this to the COG. So thank you. Mayor Hughes.
Okay, I am taking our priorities from about 2 years ago. We did a pretty extensive community survey when we were doing our last comp plan update, and really just a strong theme through all of our communities' priorities was environment. So I would say, not necessarily in this order, that our community values the beautiful environment, because outdoor recreation is very important to our residents. They value shoreline. I value shoreline protection and climate planning, because we are a shoreline community with infrastructure and historic resources that are at risk. We value slow and thoughtful growth, because small town and rural values are important to my family. Now, just a little side note I'd like to add to that is, you know, Coofville is like every other place on the island. Everybody wants affordable housing if it's not next to them. And everybody wants more housing inventory if it's not next to them. Mm-hmm. So Coopville really values its small town feeling. But we had a big brouhaha at our last comp plan update when we started talking about increased density within the town. So I just want to agree that some desires are not backed up with reality.
Yeah.
And the last one I would say is that protection... I value protection of our natural resources. And this was a really big priority for our community. And it was because they value wildlife habitat, open spaces, protection of the forests and the agricultural land that we already have around us. And they feel like that's the rural feeling, and the protection of that, which we feel lucky because we're in the reserve, that is a big part of what makes Coopville special. It was really environmental and small town feeling and community. That was the big priority.
Thank you for me, especially for mentioning the slow and thoughtful growth, because that really is our tension, right? That is our tension. The thing that that the board approved yesterday includes an expectation that Coopville is going to have a 30% increase in density, that, and you guys are going to have the conversations about that. And so slow and thoughtful growth, and how do we do that given the demands of increasing our density in our jurisdictions is going to be very, very, it's going to be our challenge, I think.
And Coopville had the lowest percentage of density increase of the three UGAs. So it's really, these are going to be really hard conversations with the public.
Yeah, Langley has a recommended increase of 60%. So how are we going to do that? John?
Well, my wife and I attended a meeting that Island Senior Resources put on a couple of days ago. We were one of three other couples that attended that meeting. They were looking for input about how they apply their budget to all the things they're involved with. Healthcare access should be much higher priority, you know, getting on and off the island to get to the hospitals on the mainland is a fragile process. demanding time-wise, cost-wise, to get to access healthcare. I'm actually a healthcare provider, so I get to see it personally, patient by patient, the struggles people are going through to access healthcare. If it's outside of my scope of practice, and I try to refer them on, they're going to Bellingham, Mount Vernon, Anacortes, Everett, and the quality of care is actually suffering on the island, and in the county. So, me, healthcare access, the quality care.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate that. Mayor Horstman, do you have any thoughts about what your values are for in Island County? What do you value?
I was actually thinking this in terms of reflecting what I think the Langley community values. I don't differ with these, but I do want to point out, consistent with everybody that's answered so far, inherent in each one of these is a tension between the value and then the reality of what implementing the value actually means. So I think the Langley community has a very strong commitment to the environment, specifically as expressed around the need to plan for climate change and protect our natural resources. There is a very strong attachment to the small town character of Langley. I'm not sure that others would express it this way, but I think there is an emphasis on economic vitality. So there's a recognition for the need for affordable housing. There's a recognition that that means density, but then we come into the tension pieces, which is, how do we protect the environment and have our small town character and have a huge increase in density in the town? Three things to value that on the face are not necessarily intention, but when it comes to practice, then you're right. Everybody wants affordable housing unless it affects where they are living specifically.
Thank you, Mayor Horstman. Appreciate that. And Sabrina, welcome. Do you have any thoughts about what you or the city of Oak Harbor values here about Island County?
So many things to value. Thank you. I would say we're all in a similar place because it does go back to the fair distribution of the affordable housing and making sure that housing in general that's, distributed fairly and not put on one of the communities over another. We're also, focused on economic growth, tourism, again, that balance of environment with the other things we're working on. And really, we also support the Navy locally. That is a value for our community. That jet noise is also something that our community, it's about jobs. It's about the way that it works with the other, focuses that we have in our community. And then I would say, that ties in with our economic vitality and growth as well. And so I think the biggest thing that I'm hearing from others and that we also feel is that balance, balancing all of these things as we're thinking about that for our communities.
Okay, thank you. Wow. I appreciate hearing that all of this, three of you spoke about the importance of that balance, keeping who we are, along with the realization of that we're going to have to change to some degree. So thank you very, very much. I really appreciate you participating, all of you participating in this exercise with us. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Michael to run.
Before we turn it over, I have a comment. I wanted to riff a little bit off of Kurt's comments, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, so one of the things that is, I think, a key issue in our community, I'm not sure how it plays into the comp planning, except maybe in our economic development and housing development, but the reality of the cost of living for many of our seniors and our working families is a challenge. And I've been giving a lot of thought to how do we do affordable housing? How do we address that? And the tensions that people often express to us on the board about rising property taxes. That comes up a lot for us. And I've been spending a lot of time thinking about that since, Emily, this is after I wrote to you, because I think when we do good economic development And when we're able to broaden our tax base with jobs and industries and businesses, that tax base will offset and support government services, our schools, our fire and rescue, our libraries. And so I'm going to sort of riff a little bit on Kurt and was it Sabrina who also talked about economic development, the importance of economic development as a way to broaden our tax base so we're not as dependent on our property taxes or levies to support critical services in the county. I don't know where that fits, Emily, but that has been sort of a growing sort of aha for me.
Thank you, Janet. That's good input. Anyone else on this topic? Okay, thank you. Michael.
Okay, so we'll try to get through this relatively quickly. I just wanted to first explain this was sent out to you with your packets, and then some of you who are in the room have a printed copy. It is a new version since the last time that you saw it with changes that were made based on the comments from last time. And just for clarity's sake, with the track changes, the things that are red underlined or single underlined, if you don't have any color, those are additions from the existing version, not necessarily additions from the version you had last time, but additions from the policy that exists today that is approved. There are double underline or green on double underline if you have it in color, or double cross out, green double cross out. Those are things that were just moved. They're already in the existing policy. They're just in a different spot in the existing policy. So that's what the edits are. I didn't want people to be confused that the red edits are all new things from the prior version. It's the new things from the existing approved policy. And then the edits that I made based on the last meetings and what I've heard so far is removed the eligibility of housing units to be funded, but clarified that infrastructure that supports housing is still eligible or would be eligible. That was based on comments from the last meeting. Added a focus on number of bedrooms and a mix of housing types. So if you had, you know, 2 and 3 bedroom units, that would qualify. If there were more bedrooms, I would qualify higher than just 1 bedroom units. Like 5 3-bedroom units is 15 bedrooms, whereas 5 1-bedroom units would be 5 bedrooms, and the 3-bedroom units would qualify higher. Although I do think there's value in a mix of housing sizes, right? Because there's different family sizes. There's also a reference in here for at least one occupant needing to be locally employed. So that brings in that idea that it's for employment housing. And then I added something that was really more a management edit. No one mentioned this, but I added it, which is a definition for project initiation, which would be essentially built in that people need to get the projects moving. They have to request a reimbursement, or after a period of time, their contract would expire, their grant opportunity would expire, and that money goes back into the pool. Because that's one of the things that we find is sometimes people or entities apply, but they're not really ready to execute. And it goes a pretty long time before the money's actually accessed. So that's it. And then if you'll, you have two handouts, essentially. One is what I kind of just went over, Council of Governments, RCED program revision notes and questionnaire. The backside of that is the questionnaire. That's where I'd like to focus and try and move through these. I tried to bring forward the questions that I would need answered or would need input on in order to bring forward a final version to the board. The first one is, do you want to make the program more targeted to actual jobs created or retained? Essentially, right now, economic development opportunities are arguably the same under the policy, whether they actually have like a business partner that intends to occupy a site or expand on a site or preserve jobs. They're leaving because water capacity is inadequate, for example. So they're going to relocate out of the county. But if we can upgrade that water facility or the pipeline in that street, then they're like, oh, that solves our problem. We would stay. If that where you have a direct connection to a business opportunity, jobs preserved or created, do you want to value those higher? The way those are valued higher are in the program policies number 3A and B. Essentially, it qualifies the grant amount the grant percentage that someone could get. I shouldn't say amount. It's not the dollar value. It's the percentage. So projects that have a actual job partner associated with them would be eligible for up to 75% grant amount, whereas ones that are just, if we build it, they may come, are 50% grant match.
Okay.
That's
The
first item.
To be clear, so are you asking for a roundtable discussion this, Michael? Are you asking us to take this document home and fill it out and give it to you? What is your expectation?
Well, my hope was that people would have taken some time to look at it before the meeting so they could give answers here.
Okay, great.
But I think if we do roundtable discussion, you've got about the 25 minutes to get through it. We need to do that pretty succinctly.
Okay. So does anyone have any thoughts on this? Do you want to make the program more targeted to actual jobs created or retained?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
My answer would be different based on the project type. So there's a little bit of a chicken and egg with, say, affordable housing or housing. I'm going to leave all the adjectives off because that gets me in trouble. So I could see...
So, Mayor Horstman, before you go on with the question, there's a different qualifying parameter for housing infrastructure. Okay. So this is only for things that are job related, not housing related.
Great. Perfect.
That separate section.
Well, but when you say make the program more targeted, it is already targeted at, it's always been.
It is
already targeted for that. So what do you mean make it more?
Well, it's
like targeted, you just said, bigger percentage of a grant based on the proof of more jobs.
Right. So right now the program is set up so there's a 10% grant match requirement. So you can get a 90% grant for whether you're putting in a new sewer line in an area that is zoned for manufacturing, or if you had a new major manufacturing business who was asking for that sewer line because they want to locate on that property. It doesn't matter. They're judged evenly. So that would be the difference, would be in under the proposal. If you're saying we want to build a sewer line into this neighborhood because we think businesses will come if there's a sewer line, qualifies lower as a grant percentage than one where you say we have Amazon and they want to locate a distribution center in, you know, Carver, and this is the site we'd like to put in water, sewer, and a road and get a grant for a portion of that. That's the difference.
Well,
I think that makes sense because that's what this program was always about. And it has always been hard, really hard to prove what, especially additional job opportunities, but my initial thought is that's going to make just going to make Oak Harbor have a huge advantage for anything they apply for because they've got that type of zoning. They've got bigger areas for new or expanded growth for that kind of job retention. So, but I guess, do I care? Because I don't really want manufacturers in Coopville. So, you know, it's like the same thing. It's like what we're saying about housing. I feel the same way about certain type of industry in Coopville. So,
okay. So
I'm not helping.
I can't disagree with what you said.
I'm not helping you.
I think what you said is really, that makes tons of sense. What I would point out is things like putting a new roof on a port facility so that the place stays adequate for the businesses that are within it is a much smaller project that isn't a giant, you know, Amazon. That was probably not the best example, right? Because it's out of our scale, but that would qualify as a job retention potentially. Right. So there may be things that would apply under Coopville's scenario aren't the big pie in the sky projects.
But now that's an interesting example. I mean, I know you just pulled that one out, but in that particular example, I would say no to this money because there's other way more buckets of money that will do repair, maintenance, especially in Coopville on a historic building. Mm-hmm. And this money is, I don't know, I think it should be more really focused on economic development, not maintenance of facilities. And I know that was just one example.
Well, let me bring up an example of something that might be more complicated than what you're saying. technical services. You know, a few years back, the Port of Skagit Industrial Park was trying to pull technical services out of Oak Harbor because they were offering a shovel-ready site, and they had a budget to move forward on a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility, 70 jobs. You know, Commissioner Johnson and Price Johnson and Hanel approved an extension of the sewer line, you know, into their building site next to their old site. Mm-hmm. Now they have a lot more employees than they had before because of that investment of a infrastructure. So it's not always as clean as retain versus new. You know, they actually didn't know how much they were going to expand, but they ended up being much bigger than they were before. So how do you ask for money and say it's retention and get scored versus, you know, more jobs? That's a corporate decision.
Yeah, so what you look for there is not the corporate partner to make a statement. And you obviously, it's not contractual where you're not requiring them. We can't mandate right. that they hire more people. Right. We can't force them to build a new facility. But you go on some good faith there of the fact that there's a business partner willing to say that.
Right.
Can I?
Yes.
Just, I'm sorry if there's background noise. I'm kind of stuck in a cafeteria. But one of the things that maybe just complicating this a bit more is the term we've been using a lot, which is economic vitality. And part of the reason is on South Whidbey, we have a really good, solid group of businesses, and we're not expecting, we don't have an industrial park, and we're probably not going to have one soon. And maybe some airport property will get access and that'll change, but it's a ways down. So what's occurred to us, our job is actually helping the businesses that are here maintain. So that's part of your discussion here is economic vitality in it and workforce housing. And I know that's a different category, Michael, and I appreciate it. I read through your information. I think it's well done, but there are things, there's only so much economic development that different associations and the cities on the South would be, are even going to be, zone for or ever be permitted for. So in the meantime, I think the Rural County Economic Development Fund should be able to be used for economic vitality. If you got a restaurant that can't be open more than 3 or 4 days a week, and there's a way that we can help them, I think that this fund should allow that to happen. I don't know if you were crossing over when you said retention or what. I just thought the term economic vitality just probably stirs the pot a little more, but I think it's worth thinking about.
Yeah. I want to go to the next question. I'm kind of not hearing anyone say, no, we don't want to make the program more targeted to actual jobs or retained. I think that you're hearing positive.
I had criticism of this program over the years. I've been sitting in this seat of, spend how much money we spend for 3 jobs versus how much money we might spend to support 50 jobs, mm-hmm. and those being treated often equally. And to spend a lot of money to support 3 jobs doesn't work for me as much as spending a lot of money to either retain 50 jobs, to John's point, or to create 50 jobs. That's the one thing that I think I appreciate as I read through this in this document, unless I have happy ears, Michael, and that differential is not in the document, because I'm reading through it and I think I see it, but I want to make sure I do see that we are going to be more discerning about the number of jobs we're creating or retaining.
So I would answer that by saying it really requires the board who makes the decisions to grant or not grant funds to be the gatekeeper on that sort of thing, and scale project awards to the impact.
Yes and no, because it does require the board to do that, but when board, but the policy is the sustaining document around whether boards come or go. So we, if we as a group value or want to give more percentage points to 0 to 25 jobs, 25 to 75 jobs, and 75 jobs as an above, then we should have that in our document.
Yes, and that is not in the document. And what I was going to finish saying there was,
I apologize.
That is, no, that's okay. But the way that that's kind of built in here, because I didn't go as far as what you were just saying, is that a larger grant match from the applicant will, I think, have a restraining effect on someone applying for an expensive project that only preserves three jobs. If somebody's saying we want to get a grant for $250,000 and we're willing to put forward $250,000 and this is going to preserve three jobs, that's I think that application is unlikely to cross the board's desk.
Because it did in the past.
Right, but that was because they got 90% of the money from the RCED fund and only had to give 10%. But if you have to give 50%, you've got so much more skin in the game that you have to say, what's the value? What's the impact? But there is nothing in here, just to be really clear, to Commissioner St. Clair's comment. It doesn't say it's ranked by the number of jobs. Those are qualifiers, I think, that would work through the process, but you don't get more about, you don't get a higher grant score by providing more jobs.
Wow. I agree with Janet. I really think that should be the number of jobs you're protecting or creating should be a huge impact on whether you get a grant, how much you get, whether it's a loan, what your match is. Again, this puts all the power in Elk Harbor's place, but I mean, reality, we only have a certain amount of money. I mean, we're not going to fix everybody's problems. And, you know, like Janet says, these decision boards all can get political. And so everybody's fighting for their own community without looking at the bigger picture for the county.
This is about,
I think you need to factor in that if you already have a job here, you probably have housing here already. So that becomes a non-issue, that you're not stressing out the market to build more homes. If you're retaining that job, that there's a plus side for
retention rather than
eliminating that pressure for building more houses, you know, which, you know, is problematic for some communities, Langley, you know, Coopville, you know, so.
Not problematic. We just don't want to.
Well, and John, that's true if that job has a career ladder that allows them to increase their income as the cost of living here increases.
And you're assuming that the employees are living where they're working, and that's not happening in Coopville. We have three gigantic employers in Coopville, the county, the hospital, and the school district,
and
none of those employees live here.
Yeah.
I mean, the percentage that live in the town is tiny.
Right.
So that we don't fit that model.
Kurt.
Yeah, and good to go along with that exactly. The data that we got showed that, especially with healthcare workers and some restaurant workers, they're coming from out of the county in order to work here. So I think that's a little different than what John's trying to present. I think we'd have more locals living here, doing more work here. And whether that provides new jobs, I don't know. I think that it creates new opportunities for businesses. So the problem is, if you can just back up 1 second, guys, one of the earliest grants we got was to expand our harbor in Langley, and it was wonderful. It was a great expansion, and you have to sit down during the application process, and I'm sure you all know this, and you have to try and make up or assume how many jobs are going to be created by the fact that now we're going to have a lot more boats and larger boats and possibly some tour boats in town, none of which you know exactly for sure you're going to have. And then there's a requirement, or there was a requirement, Michael, you can tell me, that for 5 years after that, that you continue to document, you know, whether or not you actually provided those jobs or they were provided from that. But There's a lot coming from out of the county. This is a very difficult thing to quantify. I personally would go, and I know Janet, you are a county commissioner, but I would go a little less on the specifics and leave it up to the a little more up to the discretion of the board. And by the way, Michael, you said dislocation instead of discretion of the board in your paperwork. I just thought I'd point out that little typo.
Oh, thanks.
So I want to welcome Representative Dave Paul, who's joined us. Thank you, Dave. We're talking about the Rural County Economic Development part of our agenda. Did you have anything to add to that conversation?
No, I'm actually wearing my college hat and observing from the Economic Development Council perspective. Had another appointment this morning. Sorry, I'm joining you late. But just listening and wearing my Economic Development Council hat.
Great, thank you. So Michael, where do you want to go now?
So I think the answer to the first point is yes, in regards to jobs in hand, jobs retained versus potential future jobs. That and then I think the board will have to struggle with what are those grant percentages that are built in there, because that's a separate topic that I don't think we have the ability to go into here. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like, and maybe we need a show of hands if that works, but did people support or what Commissioner St. Clair suggested on weighing more jobs is a qualifier. More jobs is better than fewer jobs as a grant qualifier.
Okay, let's just kind of go around the room. Molly, you thought?
Well, as a grant ranking, yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that.
John?
I agree with that.
Okay, Kennedy?
I agree. I'll make it more complicated. Michael, you're going to hate this, and probably it's not realistic, but also tying it to a wage level that's livable. So more is not necessarily
okay.
Enough.
I was thinking the exact same thing, because not only would you be comparing three jobs to 50 jobs, are those three jobs part-time, non-living wage jobs? You know, because you can improve, not only can you create more jobs, you can create better jobs that provide a living wage with bigger companies than you can with small mom and pop things.
And that really speaks to the housing aspect, whereas if you create a whole bunch of jobs for people who can't afford housing, then you really haven't done much positive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't hate that at all.
I think that's an excellent addition.
Yeah. Kurt, your thoughts?
As long as there's a sort of a separate category for housing, yeah, I'm totally in favor.
Okay, yeah. Sabrina?
Sorry, I've had a couple of interruptions here trying to cover. So I agree it should be a factor, but I also appreciate the concept of the type of employment that we're talking about when we talk about whether it's full-time, you know, short-term, et cetera. I think there should be some consideration for that as well. It is more complicated, but I also think that is a factor when we're talking about creating jobs.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. So then the next item would be the second question. And I think the answer to this question is yes. So I don't think there needs to be much time spent on it based upon what people commented on before. Do you want to add housing infrastructure as an eligible use? And I believe the answer is
yes. Does anyone disagree with doing that?
I agree. And as the poster child, or maybe not the best situation for this, I think there should be waiting for workforce or other income limited housing.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's crafted. So okay. I think that's great.
Okay.
We can move on. Then this is another big one. Do you support an effort to make the investments more strategic by requiring they be looked at holistically as part of an overall countywide economic development work? And how would you do that? The proposal that I have in here is that it's the projects are included in the SEDS project list, or the projects directly align with a SEDS goal or policy. So again, your project doesn't have to specifically be in the SEDS. The project could be something like, I should have made some better examples before I start throwing them out, but say it says enhance the availability of medical services in the county, and the project is to put in street frontage improvements at a site that's zoned for a doctor's office, and the doctor's office is a partner in it and says, yes, we do intend to develop here. And so it's like building that street frontage improvement on X street in X location wasn't a project, but supporting additional medical services in the county was, then that clearly aligns. It doesn't have to be in the project list, mm-hmm. but then you'll have definitely, everyone will have projects in the project list because you, there are some like certain
some
things
way
you
to
know.
Massage it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that again, this goes back to the SEDS. There's been a lot of talk about maintaining that project list, and Sharon and Sharon Sappington and Jennifer Novak and I had a conversation between the two COG meetings on how, what would be probably the least labor intensive, but still a reasonable way to maintain it. And what we would propose is that the SEDS have, there be a quarterly meeting that is hosted, and then that quarterly meeting would basically be a check-in on, has anyone made any progress on any of the things? Is there any talk, and have any new items come up that you'd like to look at adding to the project list? And then once a year, that would have an output of a report on progress and a proposal for an amended project list. And we would have to talk about how that actually gets done, who does that work, but that would be ensuring that the project list stays live and dynamic, and folks have an opportunity to adjust it.
Do you want to get input on this now, Michael, or do you want to continue this on to our next meeting?
I'd like to get input on this one item because I think I can probably deal with the rest and okay. move it to the board without it. Basically, this is the section that
Michael, how much detail do you really think you need? I mean, I know that's sort of overarching, but is the detail that you're trying to put in here to make this like totally quantifiable, or for people to understand what they're applying for, is that to make your job easier sorting through project proposals, or the commissioners, it sort of defends the commissioners against projects that might not fit? I mean, at some point, don't you just have to leave some of this up to the discretion of the commissioners? I mean, how much detail should we be going into it?
It's a good question. It's both, I'll admit. It's both making it easier for staff to talk about projects and explain projects and put some sort of qualifiers in on whether this is a project that aligns with the program or doesn't align with the program, that maybe looks like a good project to be funded or doesn't look like a good project to be funded. Some of it is that, but, and that also gives the board the opportunity to review it against something somewhat critical. What I would say for some context is, in the applications that I've received, what we've seen things where someone wanted to do a project and it said, is this included in your comprehensive plan? And what was attached was the entire comprehensive plan. And the response was yes. So it's like, well, where does it actually say this is something? And then when you go back and look at it, it's like improve community facilities is a goal. And this is a community facility. So therefore it's in our comprehensive plan. And then that makes it eligible. That's so loose, it doesn't give the board anything to really go on. And then I think it becomes potentially arbitrary and capricious in saying, no, we don't like that project. Oh, but we like that project. It's not fitting any kind of a recipe.
Oh.
Okay. Anything else that you need? Anybody have any other comments on this?
So, Michael, you would like it to be on a SEDS project list? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's included now in this proposal, is that it's included on the SEDS project list, or it can be shown to clearly align with one of the SEDS goals.
Or it can be shown.
Either or.
I think that's either fine.
Or. I think it can be shown.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's got so many different lists. And again, I say this is a limited pot of money.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to fund all the applications you get. I think it will be clear to the commissioners, or the people that decide which projects meet, you know, more of the goals of this project, of this SEDS money, than others. Mm-hmm. And it is arbitrary. It's like deciding grants for any program.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't, I don't mean to say that. It's important that you have clear guidelines so the applicants know in the first place whether their project's even eligible. There's a lot of projects that Coopville's eligible for different things, and we don't have a big staff to do that. So we're going to really focus on the things that we feel we have a really good chance on.
Right.
I don't see Coopville being very competitive with SED's money. I never have. That doesn't mean it's not a good program and it can't be used effectively other places in the county. I don't see anything wrong with trying to put a little bit more specific requirements on it to help the board decide, make those decisions.
Okay.
Oak Harbor, you're welcome.
No, I appreciate that. I was just thinking, I like that because it allows some flexibility, but also keeps within the SEDS list. So yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. You need to wrap up the meeting. Wait, and I think I can,
you think you
bring
can get
something
it
forward to the board from,
okay,
this.
Yeah. Terrific. Terrific. So a couple things. We have our, is our motion to approve the minutes from February 28, 2024?
I'll move.
Can we amend them to include that I was actually present at the meeting, wasn't in the minutes?
Absolutely.
I think that's appropriate.
What? I move to approve the minutes as amended.
Okay. So there's been a motion. Is there a sec? Did someone second that? Okay. Thank you, Kennedy. Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes with the addition that Kurt Gordon was at that meeting. And thank you for that. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. So the next thing I wanted to do was just recognize Sharon Sappington, who's here. Thank you, Sharon, for being here. Sharon is leaving her current position to move on to other things. And I just wanted to express our gratitude for all the great work that you've done with the EDC over the years, Sharon.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it was a hard decision to make. But yeah, I'm excited about moving on, and I'm working closely with our board. We have a search committee that's formed to find my predecessor. So I'll be focusing on critical paths until I leave at the end of May. And the EDC is going to be fine.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. And Kurt, you're ready to run the next meeting?
Do I have to log back in, or can I just leave this on?
You can leave this on.
We're staying. Good.
Yeah, then I will.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. we're gonna adjourn this meeting so that we can get set up. We have a public hearing at the IRTPO meeting coming up. So this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Nice to see everybody.